You ever sit in a cockpit and just run your hand across the instrument panel, feeling the rivets under your fingertips, and think about all the hands that touched it before yours? I do that every time I get near a warbird. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is The Hangar on Radio Hangar. Today I want to tell you about an airplane that doesn't always get the glory. The Mustang gets the movies, the Corsair gets the bent wings and the cool factor. But if you want to talk about the single fighter that broke the back of Japanese naval aviation in the Pacific, you're talking about the Grumman F-6F Hellcat. Pull up a chair. This one's worth your time. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. So let's go back to 1942. The United States Navy has a problem, a big one. Their frontline fighter, the Grumman F-4F Wildcat, is a tough little airplane, rugged, reliable, but it is getting outclassed by the Mitsubishi A6M-0 in almost every performance category. The Zero is faster, it climbs better, it turns tighter. American pilots in the Wildcat are surviving on tactics and guts, using the THAC weave, fighting in pairs, refusing to get into turning fights, but they are taking losses, and everybody from the flight deck to Washington knows they need something better, fast. Now here's where it gets interesting. Grumman Aircraft Engineering Corporation, out on Long Island, New York, had already been thinking about a successor to the Wildcat, Leroy Grumman and his team. They were practical people, Ironworks, they called the company. Because everything they built was tough as a bank vault, and when they sat down to design the Hellcat, they did something brilliant. They didn't try to out-zero the Zero, they didn't chase maneuverability. They said, we're going to build a fighter that plays to American strengths. Big engine, heavy armament, armor plate to bring the pilot home, self-sealing fuel tanks, and enough speed and climb rate to dictate the terms of every fight. The engine they chose was the Pratt & Whitney R2800 Double Wasp, 18 cylinders arranged in two rows, 2,000 horsepower. That is a staggering amount of power for 1943. You fire that engine up, and the whole airplane shakes like a dog coming out of a lake, deep, guttural, a sound that gets into your chest and stays there. They wrapped that engine in a big round cowling, hung it on a fuselage that was purposely designed to be easy to manufacture, and gave it wings that folded for carrier storage. The thing was not pretty, let's be honest, compared to the sleek lines of a Spitfire or even the Corsair. The Hellcat looked like a flying oil drum. Pilots called it the aluminum tank, but it worked. Oh, did it work? The first production, F-6F-3 Hellcat, started reaching carrier squadrons in early 1943, and almost immediately the kill ratio started changing. See, the Zero's advantages all depended on the enemy playing its game. Light construction meant no armor, no self-sealing fuel tanks, one good burst from those 650 caliber machine guns on the Hellcat, and a Zero came apart or caught fire. And the Hellcat could take punishment that would have knocked any other fighter out of the sky. Pilots came back with holes you could stick your arm through, hydraulic lines shot away, control surfaces shredded, and they'd land. The plane captain would patch it up and they'd go back out the next day. But the real test, the day the Hellcat proved what it was, that came on June 19, 1944, the Battle of the Philippine Sea, what the pilots themselves called the Great Marianas Turkey Shoot. Let me set the scene for you. The United States 5th Fleet, under Admiral Raymond Spruance, is supporting the invasion of Saipan and Guam in the Mariana Islands. The Japanese Combined Fleet, under Vice Admiral Jisaburo Ozawa, is coming out to fight. This is going to be the decisive carrier battle that both sides have been building toward. Ozawa has 9 carriers, he's launching everything he has. The morning of June 19th, the Japanese send 4 massive waves of carrier aircraft toward the American fleet. We're talking about more than 300 airplanes. Zeros, Judy dive bombers, Jill torpedo bombers, all of them coming in determined to sink American carriers. Now picture this, you're a Hellcat pilot on the flight deck of the USS Lexington, or the Essex, or the Bunker Hill. The radar operators are calling out contacts, lots of contacts, the bullhorn sounds. Pilots, man your planes. You climb up that wing, drop into that cockpit, and the plane captain helps you strap in. The R2800 coughs, catches, and that massive propeller starts turning. The whole deck is organized chaos. Plane directors with their colored jerseys waving you forward. The catapult officer gives you the signal, full power. The catapult fires, and you're off the bow, sagging for just a second, before that big Pratt and Whitney grabs the air and hauls you skyward. 450 Hellcats went up that day. 450, and what happened next was less a battle and more a reckoning. The Japanese pilots in 1944 were not the same pilots who had attacked Pearl Harbor. Those men, the elite of Japanese naval aviation, most of them were already dead, killed at Midway. In the Solomons at Rabaul, the replacements were young, undertrained. Some of them had barely 100 hours of flight time, and they were flying into the teeth of 450 Hellcats flown by pilots who had been through the most rigorous training pipeline in the world. men who had been fighting for 2 years and knew exactly what they were doing. The first wave of Japanese aircraft was shredded, just torn apart. Hellcats dove through the formations, those 650 cals hammering, and Zeros and bombers were falling out of the sky in flames. The second wave fared no better, nor the third, nor the fourth. Some Japanese aircraft got through to the fleet, but the anti-aircraft fire from the ships was devastating, and almost none scored hits. By the end of June 19, 1944, the Japanese had lost between 315 and 340 aircraft in a single day. The Americans lost 23 planes in air combat, 23. You read that number and you almost can't believe it. It was the most lopsided aerial victory in the history of naval warfare. Commander David McCampbell, who would become the Navy's all-time leading ace with 34 kills, got 7 of those on June 19th alone. He described it later in an interview, said there were so many targets he barely had time to line up a shot before another airplane flew across his gun sights. He said his biggest problem was running out of ammunition. There's a famous story from that day. One of the Hellcat pilots, and I wish I could remember his exact name, radioed back to his ship after splashing his 5th aircraft of the afternoon. He said something to the effect of, "This is like an old-time turkey shoot," and the name stuck, the Great Marianas Turkey Shoot. Now I want to be careful here because I don't want to diminish the courage of those Japanese pilots. Many of them knew they were outmatched, they flew anyway. That takes a kind of bravery I hope most of us never have to summon, but the tactical reality was clear. The Hellcat, combined with American pilot training, American radar-directed fighter control, and the proximity fuse on American anti-aircraft shells, had created a killing machine that no Air Force on Earth could have survived. After the Philippine Sea, Japanese carrier aviation was effectively finished as a fighting force. They would never again launch a major carrier strike. The kamikaze campaign that followed was, in many ways, an acknowledgement that conventional air attack against the American fleet was no longer possible. And the Hellcat just kept going by the end of the war. F-6F pilots had been credited with 5,223 aerial victories. That is more than any other Allied naval aircraft. 75% of all Navy air-to-air kills in the Pacific were scored by Hellcats. The airplane produced 305 aces, and here's the number that would have made Leroy Grumman proudest of all. The overall kill ratio was 19 to 1. For every Hellcat lost in air combat, 19 enemy aircraft went down. The Hellcat did all of this in just about 2 years of frontline combat. It was introduced in 1943. By 1945, it was already being supplemented by the faster F-8F Bearcat. It had the shortest operational career of any major World War II fighter. And in that short window, it changed the course of the Pacific War. There's a Hellcat at the National Air and Space Museum's Udvar Hazy Center, out by Dulles Airport. If you're ever in the area, go stand next to it. Look at the size of that engine cowling. Look at the armor plate behind the seat. Run your eyes along those 6 gun ports in the wings. And think about a 22-year-old kid from Iowa or Texas or Brooklyn climbing into that cockpit, hooking up his oxygen mask, and launching off a carrier into a sky full of enemy airplanes. That's what the Hellcat was built for, and it delivered. You know, we spend a lot of time in aviation talking about the glamorous airplanes, the ones that look beautiful, the ones that captured the public imagination. But sometimes the airplane that matters most is the one that just does the job. Ruggedly, reliably, without flash. The Hellcat wasn't elegant. It was effective, and in wartime, effective is what keeps people alive. I pulled from Barrett Tillman's outstanding book, Hellcat, the F-6F in World War II. And from some of the oral histories in the National Naval Aviation Museum collection for today's show. Worth seeking out if this story grabbed you. This has been The Hangar on Radio Hangar. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Taildragger. Go find a Hellcat at your nearest air museum and give her a salute. She earned it.